Blog Talk Radio.
Engage for Success Radio, raising the profile of employee engagement and shining a light on good practice for people who believe there is a better way to work.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to Engage for Success Blog Talk Radio. It's quite sad this week because Ali's now left us, as you heard last week. So we've got two hosts, myself and John Ingham. I'm Joe Dodds. I'm a social media consultant working with Engage for Success on the social media side of things. And we're always looking for hosts. So if anybody else fancies themselves as a radio presenter, then do drop us a line, go to our website on our contact page and let us know, and it'd be great to hear from you. So as always, we've got the back channel going on the Google Plus site, and you can get to that by going to the link that you've got in front of you on the Blog Talk Radio page, so do join us on there. Or if you'd like to dial in, then the number's on the Blog Talk Radio page, 347-237-4274. It is an American number, so you need to dial in with 001 before that. So if you've got some questions today for our guests, then do let us know. Just before I introduce our guests, I'm just going to draw your attention to our website and our events that are coming up in April. We've got quite a number of things happening, and so I'd recommend that you go to the website and have a look under community and events and see what's happening, see if there's something in your area. We've got things like a regional practitioner event happening in Birmingham on the 10th of April. There's another one happening in Slough on the 12th. And then we've got two events on the 16th. There's an employee engagement summit in London and a Wiltshire network meeting as well. And then we've got a masterclass happening later on in April. I'm just trying to see where that's happening. That doesn't actually tell me where, but I'm sure if you click through on the website and click onto it, it'll tell you where. In fact, I could ask our guests. It looks like they're actually going to be there. And then there's another event at the Edinburgh Napier University later in the month on the 18th of April. So if you go to the Engage for Success website and click on Community and Events, then you can keep up to speed with what's happening each week on in and around the employee engagement space in the UK. So I'm not going to keep waffling on and do all of our usual stuff this week, because I'm really excited to be interviewing today David McLeod and Nita Clark of Engage for Success. So we're just going to go straight into it, because we've got tons of questions and I'm sure there'll be people asking other things as we go along. So first I'd like to say hello to David and Nita.
Hello.
Hi, lovely to be with you, Jo.
It's great to have you here. We've had the radio show a bit under the radar for the first few weeks that we were doing it, and then David and Nita heard about it and started telling everybody, and now we're feeling like people are hearing about it, so we're not really hiding anymore. So we're good to get you on as well at
good
this particular
you.
Stage. So we're just going to jump straight in. We've got some questions that we've got already, and then I'm hoping that we'll get some people either asking us on the Google Plus page as we go through, or even spookily dialing in and speaking to us. So if you do want to join in, then do please call in if you can. It's 001-347-237-4274. Okay, so shall we start then with just a bit of an introduction, David, and tell us what the Engage for Success movement is all about.
Well, perhaps I'll make a few remarks and then pass to Nita. But it's tremendous to have a chance to talk with everyone today. And as Joe said, look forward to hearing any questions, comments, probes, ideas that you've got. I guess then, following up, Joe, let's just start at the sort of the highest level, as it were, about what it is we think we're all trying to do. And as the introduction said, you know, there's a whole range of things we could do, but we're focusing on raising the profile of the importance of this topic and shining a light on good practice. So we're not trying to say, here's a model of employee engagement, this is what you need to do and the order in which you need to do it, because every context is different. However, there are the themes that have emerged through all our work together, including many people, I hope, on this call, and together, if we can just raise the profile of the topic, if we can shine a light on good practice, and then organizations say, well, for my context, these are the ideas I'd like to follow up, but those wouldn't be appropriate, then that's helpful. And just to remind ourselves that the outcomes from all this, if those are our activities, what are the outcomes? The outcomes are, if we believe that if organizations address this topic, then organizations achieve more of their outcomes. And if more organizations are achieving their outcomes, then it's good for the country. And the only way you can do this is by attending also to employee well-being. So it's good for the employee, it's good for the organization, and it's good for the country. And this whole theme, or these themes, if you like, of what we're trying to do and what the outcomes we're seeking, you know, building on the report that so many people directly and indirectly, up to a million really, if you look at some of the research we harness and so on, you know, first and initially in 2009 enabled us to write the report saying this is an important topic that people should take seriously, and then that led on to the movement that we're now involved with that I'm sure, Joe, you're going to ask us questions about. But Nita, that broadly really how we got to where we are now?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I think that our key message really is to, and you, David, you say this very well, you know, is to basically put the humanity back at work. I mean, the truth of the matter is that every organization really, really only has one asset, and that's the people who work for it. And because you can have as many processes, as much capital investment, as much IT as you want, but at the end of the day, it's the people who work in the organization who make it work or don't make it work. I like to say, you know, it's the people, stupid. And therefore, it's incredibly important that in this day and age that organizations understand that to deliver their outcomes, whether it be public, private, or third sector, they have to harness, they have to enable people to willingly bring their whole selves to work and give all they've got to give. And this idea that, you know, putting people back at the heart of our organizations is really fundamental to us. And because when you see it, when you walk into organizations, you know, that are engaged, where people are buzzing, it's absolutely unmistakable. And I think everybody listening will know bits of their organization of which this is true and other bits where it isn't. And what we really want to do is to bring the average up to the standard of the best. Because as David says, it's good for the individual, it's good for the organization, and it's brilliant for the country.
And we were talking earlier about an article that was in the Telegraph yesterday written by Archie Norman, who was actually at our Go Live event, who was our keynote speaker. And that's pretty much how he signs off the whole article, isn't it?
Yeah, he's... For those of us who were lucky enough to hear him or to know of him, I'm sure many people remember that Archie Norman was the chief executive of ASDA that came in when ASDA was at its nadir and doing really badly with very few economic levers to pull. They didn't have lots of money, they didn't have lots of investment, and they had older stores and so on. And what he wrote about in the Telegraph in an article in the business section was so compelling about respecting people and understanding what they can do if they're really involved in decision making, they're really embraced within the business, their views are taken really seriously, and yes, we have to deliver. I mean, no business, no employment, and certainly no engagement. But the way Archie talks about it in a very deductive, very very thoughtful and very delivery orientated way. In many senses, I think, Nita, we called him the godfather of the movement in the UK, and so many of the people he undertook this journey with have gone on to run some of Britain's best known companies thereafter, and so it's a real privilege to be working with him and having his support.
It is, and I think the magic of Archie is that he makes it clear this is not a soft and fluffy issue. Mm-hmm. This is an issue about deep respect for individuals, but it's also about how you harness those individuals to the purpose of the organization, whether it's private, public, or third sector. And that principle of, and the way, you know, he proved absolutely with ASDA that this works in a very authentic in a very genuine, in a way that really did harness the full potential of the people who worked in that organization. And remember, when you're talking about an organization like ASDA, you're talking about a workforce, some of whom are semi-skilled, a lot of whom are part-time women workers, not the easiest of workforces to engage, and the fact that they achieve their success. And there are other organizations, O2, for example, who've, gone from having a very challenging commercial environment, to being absolutely number one for service. Or First Direct, the bank, again, who put engagement at the heart of delivering the service that the customer or the client wants. And, this is, as I say, this is not soft and fluffy stuff. This is absolutely about the hard edge of production, but it understands that you only get that outcome, if you treat people fairly well and you listen to them and you empower them.
So the Engage for Success movement is described as voluntary. What does that actually mean in real terms?
Well, I suppose, let me kick off a thought. I suppose in a sense you can start off two ways when people come together and believe in something. You can say, well, what we need to do now is to raise lots and lots of money and then start to spend that money on activities and people and so on. Or you can go the other route, which is the route we did go, which is to say, let's get together with some people who really believe in this and let's start to try and do those things we talked about in the initial part of the blog already. And if we need resources, then let's ask those involved whether they could stump up some dosh or some people in relation to the challenges that we find ourselves facing. And we went the latter route. Now, we did raise a relatively small sum of money for administrative expenses and some other expenses and so on, but those sums have been really very modest in relation to the size of the movement and what's been achieved. And that's been an absolutely massive testament to people believing that it's either vital for their organization or it's vital for the country or it's vital for employees who've been where the evidence is really mounting about the relationship between well-being and engagement. So whichever angle they come from it, they've got involved, it's really awe-inspiring, incredibly humbling to see how many people are involved, how many organizations are involved. But working on a model that if we, for instance, we thought we needed to make a video on this, didn't we? Needed to bring it alive. And an organization, the Edge Picture Company, one of the leaders in this field, one of the world leaders in this field, said they do it at cost, but that didn't mean raising some money, and two organizations, Waits and Biz, came up with what was required, and off we go with a film and many other examples as well. So it's not that there isn't money in the movement. There is some, but essentially it's around people volunteering their effort, volunteering their time, and volunteering their people, which, Joe, if you want to explore further, be happy so to do, rather than the other model of raising lots and lots of noughts of money and then spending that on paying people and commissioning work and having contracts and lawyers and heaven knows what. And we went the former route, which so far I think most people would agree has served us well, has it not, Nita?
It has. And, I mean, when you think of the website, www.engageforsuccess.org, I mean, this is a fantastic national free-to-use resource that has been built for us with the support of WPP and Thomson Reuters. Now, that is a huge commitment that they've made to do this. And it's just, it just shows, really, that actually that the way we've done this, I think, all of us together, making it really genuinely a movement that is open to everybody. It's open to people who think and write about this, to academics who are part of our guru group, to research houses, who have an interest, to consultants. But it's particularly the thing I think in a way I'm kind of proudest of is the network of engagement practitioners. In other words, people, working for county councils or for private companies or for charities who around the country have got together to hold events to sort of mutual self-help And I mean, it is a wonderful, wonderful thing to see, because, you know, when you go to those events, and I'd encourage anybody listening who wants to hold one, we can help you do so. I mean, the mutual self-help in terms of addressing, you know, what people's challenges are just absolutely fantastic. It's just a fantastic help and resource. I think the other thing that I would say that's been interesting about us, as Sir Lord O'Donnell, the former Sir Gus O'Donnell, the head of the civil service, pointed out, it is quite unusual to have something which started under one government, because, of course, our report was produced in 2009, which the then a new government, a new incoming government of a different political complexion, also throws its weight behind. And I think it's testimony not to the work that David and I did, but to the fact that you know, increasingly people get just how much this matters. And when the Prime Minister, you know, launched this, he was very compelling, wasn't he, David?
Yeah.
He said, you know, this hits the two absolute key areas for him and for the government. One is economic growth. And as we know, the figures are very stark about, you know, only around a third of the UK workforce is actively engaged. And that's a potential loss to the UK economy per year of over £26 billion in lost productivity and performance. But he also said, and I think that this was equally significant, that it's important for the government's sense of the need for well-being. Happiness and well-being, which, as we know, the Prime Minister has made the same. And he was very compelling at the launch about this. And I think it's really, it's very interesting that those two things have come together. I'll never forget, let me just finally say this. When we were doing our report, Dame Carol Black, who is the UK expert on well-being and health at work, she came to David and I, and she said, look, I'm a GP. And I'm coming at this from a managerial, but from a health and well-being point of view. She said, you know, if there's one thing I could do to improve the health of the nation at work, it would be to improve the quality of the relationship between individuals and their line managers, because that's the single biggest cause of stress in the workplace, and stress is one of the absolutely huge issues for workplaces. And you know, that really struck us, didn't it, David? We were really absolutely kind of overwhelmed by the way she put it, because she was coming at it from a medical point of view. We're coming at it from a workplace cultural point of view. And, you know, I think it has been, just going back to your original question, Jo, I think it's the fact that we're in movement. We don't have rules. We always say, don't we, David, at Task Force and other meetings, guys, we're all making this up as we go along. I don't mean we're making the content of the engagement message, but we're making up how we do it as we go along, and that has been a huge strength.
Hmm.
Exactly, and I like the idea that you confirm we're not making the evidence up.
No, we're definitely not doing that, Jo.
Going back to your point, David, about the different types of people involved, one of the things I'd like to ask is that we talk about the task force being supported by the Department for Business, Innovation and Skills. And I'd really like to sort of explore what that really means, because I've seen online people talking about thinking we're a quango, whatever one of those is, or that we're a load of civil servants, which clearly none of us are. So who is involved and how does that all work from your perspective? Mm.
Well, we've sort of marched under the banner in a way of government sponsored but employer led, and I guess your question is, what does that mean? It is very helpful, as Nita said, to have politicians, you know, ticking the box and accepting this is an important topic from all political persuasions. You know, this is more important than politics. This is about our economic welfare as a country, and then our welfare in total. So it is important to have that fundamental part of our society called the political process ticking the box. And we're actually delighted that, as Nita said, we were launched under the last Labour government. The Prime Minister launched the task force, and indeed Joan Swinson, Liberal Democrat, came to our launch and has been hugely supportive. So in that sense, we're government-sponsored. However, we decided that in order to give ourselves the maximum freedom for manoeuvre, in order, as Nita implied, to go where we felt we needed to go, to move quickly, to keep the bureaucracy to an absolute minimum, that if we had a group of people under the guru banner, under the task force banner, under the practitioner banner, under the sponsor banner, brought together in this movement, then we can decide, based on the feedback we get, based on the opportunities that presented ourselves, to move in the directions that we think is important. If we think it's important to make a video, we should. If we think it's important to have a website, we set one up. If we want to have events around the country, then we do. And the we being a very, very huge, broad-scale we, because Nita and I are just absolutely privileged to be able to facilitate a bit here and there. But the work of the practitioners' events and so on is run by a practitioner subgroup, and what they've done in getting this going and turning what was an initially a very small idea, which was we got some criticism about being too London-focused. So we said, well, why don't we ensure there are some events around the country? And that's when that group picked it up, an example of what Nita said, having the flexibility to move, making it up. And they started to develop this idea, this agenda that works brilliantly well. They're going around the country, and they really turned it into a very fundamental part of what we're trying to do. So that's an example of being employer-led, i.e. being able to go where we want to go. So we're not accountable to the government. We're not run by, I think somebody said, this is run by, quotes, load of civil servants. No, it's not. I'm absolutely delighted that civil servants are involved. They're a massive part of the economy dealing with some fundamentally important issues. So we're delighted that the public sector is involved. But we run it as we see fit, don't we, Nita? And that just gives us the freedom, but equally the fact that this furrow we're ploughing has the support of the political parts of the economy.
Spectrum. Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think what's also, I mean, if you look at the task forces at the epicenter of everything that we've done, and if you look at the fantastic range of individuals and organizations on there, we have the TUC and we have the CBI. We've got the Federation of Small Business. We've got CIPD. We've got NHS employers. We've got Akivo, the chief executives of voluntary organizations, as well as, you know, really leading practitioners like Tanis Dodge from Marks & Spencer's and Alex Lewis and BAE. And it's invidious to pick people out because we've got such. And I think the really fantastic thing is that we are all learning about this as we go along. I mean, there are, in a sense, there's no right or wrong answers or ways of doing this. I mean, I think we're learning increasingly that the magic of engagement kind of lies in having almost a conversation in the organization about, you know, what do we want to be like? What do we want in our DNA? How are we going to articulate our values? And how are we going to make sure that our behaviors reflect those values, that we've got trust in the organization? And I think there's a lot of developing thinking around this, which is moving away, as I said at the beginning, from the kind of whole, you know, people are human resource number 3279, you know, and you will turn up at 9 and you will leave at 5 and you know, this is a circumscribed thing that we expect you to do, to an understanding that in this day and age, you know, with the death of deference and trust and the fact that people come to work and they want meaning at work, you can't manage in that old command and control way anymore. It just does not work. You'll get sort of fitful obedience, which will give you, you know, sort of 10% of what you really need.
So another question, and we have limited time, so it may be that we sort of talk around this one. For me, there's always a tension between the fact that we talk about being very inclusive and involving everybody, and the fact that because we have sort of our own vernacular, we have our own stories and this conversation that people who are involved in the movement sort of have and understand, that it can almost seem exclusive, which is probably where some of the misunderstandings come from. I know that inclusive is where we are, but how do you speak to those people who see it as exclusive because they're not involved yet? How do you encourage them to just come and join us? I mean, obviously everything you've said so far is talking to that, but is there anything else you can add to that?
Yeah, come and join us. Join in, take part, you know, offer your blogs, offer your insights, offer your thoughts, because it's your energy. Our raw material through this movement is people's energy. While we've got energy, we move forward, the movement moves. And if we don't have energy, it doesn't move. So please do join in. Now, look, in the real world, of course, there has to be some orchestration of what happens. We have to go on inputting to the website. We have to roll out practitioner events and so on. Organizations that have seconded people to work part-time or even full-time on keeping this whole thing going, you know, they're very much in all the core meetings and so on. That's inevitable. But that, you know, if people can offer those things, that's really helpful. And if you can't, then please do take part through these various groups we've been talking about, because it's really only, as I say, your commitment that's it is actually been very inspiring the way the consultants, the research houses, and the academics have played a really critical part. We had a meeting in Ashridge just the other day where we Ashridge could cope with about 100, and I think within 24 hours all 100 places were taken, and there's a waiting list of 70 in the next 24 hours. So, you know, people wanting to take part and wanting to contribute their conclusions and help create momentum going forward. So we're really sorry if anyone feels there's any sense of exclusivity. It's absolutely not what we're trying to do. It's quite the reverse. That's why all our material is available to anyone when they go on the website. The film's available to anyone. Practitioner events are available to anyone. We do ask that people share. We do ask that people have got insights, because they've devoted their working lives to this. They offer those insights they feel able to do. We're not a sort of dating agency, but we're really trying to ensure that all the things that people have got to contribute, all the energy that people have available, creates and makes the movement move to achieve those things we spoke about earlier on. And so far, we've just been awestruck by the amount of help. But it's certainly not, and we apologize if anyone feels there's any exclusivity about it. You drop us a note, get involved. Is that right, Nita?
No, oh, absolutely. I mean, we'd be nuts, wouldn't we? It would be nuts to have a movement about engagement that wasn't engaging. I mean, it really would. And I repeat, you know, there is no model. There's no right or wrong answer. There's growing evidence. There's growing case studies. There's growing thinking about this. And we want everybody, you know, who's got something to contribute this to take part. And that's why the social media, Joe, that you're involved in is so incredibly important. But, no, David's absolutely right. You know, we really do. We set out from the beginning, and we hope we are still, you know, absolutely as inclusive in this as possible. And one of the interesting things that's happening, just finally, is how this is beginning to spark interest internationally, isn't it, David? Mm. You know, we've got the wonderful David Zinger in Canada. We've got stuff happening, really developing in Australia, Italy. There's a sort of sense that, you know, this is a subject whose sort of time has come, really.
Most definitely. Now, we have literally a minute and a half, and I've had a question come up on Google Plus, so I'm going to say it. We've got about 30 seconds each. No, not even that long. So it's from Joe Moffat from a company called Woodread, and she says, given the high profile and the momentum that the movement has gained in recent months, when do you hope to see organisations reporting real progress in reducing the $26 billion engagement deficit gap?
Great question. Nita, what's the great answer?
The great answer is, as soon as possible, I would say. As soon as possible.
It would be wonderful, setting, wouldn't it, to get from the bottom quartile to the top quartile. You know, it'd be wonderful. And there's work going on to take this to analysts in the financial community, so they start asking chief executives about it. There's work going on there. Work going on with the RSA to get this into the centre of the economic debate. So all sorts of ways of trying to move it along so that we do actually get the outcomes that you mentioned.
Exactly.
Excellent.
Right.
Thank you. So I think we've almost got to the end. We've got about 30 seconds, and that includes our jingle. So I'm going to say thank you so much to David and Nita to come and joining us, and we'll have to get you back on another one, because this isn't enough time at all, is it?
Well, thank you.
It's
all.
It's been a pleasure.
Hugely.
Thank you, Joe. Thank you for everything.
Yeah.
Engage for Success Radio, raising the profile of employee engagement and shining a light on good practice for people who believe there is a better way to work.